So it is in fact the first time that I'm talking to you, but not the first time that a representative from our little team on Open Access is talking to one of your conferences. So it's I guess it was a pleasure to be here. It's not only nice to be in front of you to talk about what we are doing, but it's also nice for me to learn, because yesterday the session was particularly interesting. Could not come on the first day, but I learned a lot on the metrics, the art metrics, and I didn't expect to be overwhelmed by so much information about open access to data. So it's always give and take when you're invited to a conference. So thank you again. This presentation is the first one that we make after the publication of a couple of important documents that have been adopted by the Commission in July. So you will see maybe the first half is something that some of you may know. It's a little bit of a repetition of things we have already said. But as you know, repetition is the mother of knowledge. So it's never bad to repeat a few things. And the second half is a bit more the novelty about our documents. The title of this presentation is maybe not the sexiest one apart from open access. But what we want to say about open access in Horizon 2020, that is in the European Commission and the research that we are going to fund from 2014, so Horizon 2020 is the new name for FP7 that you know, and the European research area, well, to simplify, let's say European Union, and to simplify, let's say Europe. So it's open access in the European Commission and Europe. So this is the outline of this presentation. It's always nice in the beginning to say who we are and what we do, because there are lots of misconceptions about the European Commission, especially when you hear back in your country, if you are European, that Brussels did that, Brussels did this. So it gives you a bit an idea that it's not always, you know, the European Commission alone, but there are also other partners. Open access in FP7, so it's a bit the past or the present. What is new on the agenda? And a few words of conclusion. So what is the European Commission? It's not only this iconic building on the right hand of this of the slide. Actually, the European Commission is much more than one building. It's equivalent to ministries, if you want. So I think there are like 20 buildings in Brussels. So don't think that the Commission is only one building. And there are people inside those buildings working, and we are divided in lots of departments that we call Directorate Generals. That's our jargon. So what do we do that can interest you? We do policy, which is quite obvious, but how do you do policy? It's based a lot on consultations, on debates, on surveys, etc. The Commission always has to draw its work based on consultations and consensus. As a policymaker, the European Commission can also invite member states to take actions, and we'll come back to that with our so-called recommendations. And the Commission can also propose legislations, as I will show you with our documents adopted in July. The Commission is not alone. There are other institutions. The most important ones are the European Parliament, that is the representative of the European citizens, and the Council, that is the governments, the 27 governments. So we're a policymaker, we're also a funding agency that you know. You know the Framework Programme for Research and Innovation. It's a very long title. So the seventh one was called FP7. There's a change with the next envelope of money, and it's going to be called Horizon 2020, H2020. Get used to it or not used to it. And as a funding agency, we have to set also rules for how to distribute this money and how to keep control of this. Because, of course, it's a question of responsibility. This is money from the European taxpayers. So for that, we set also in particular rules for access and dissemination. And last but not least, the Commission, in the case that interests us today, is also a funder for infrastructure. and can act as a capacity builder. So I gave a few examples, like with OpenAI, for instance, but the Commission can also support some networking activities. Why those two ladies? Equivalent to ministers, if you want, and we call them commissioners, and they are two services and two persons on top of the services. So I think it's important also for you to understand a little bit who's who. We call them commissioners. Nelly Kroes is a commissioner, but is also vice president. She's a Dutch citizen. She's responsible for what is called digital agenda. And so it's quite horizontal and in terms of a portfolio, but when it comes to data, for instance, this is certainly in her services that you have much more knowledge and connections. Commissioner Maura Geoghegan-Quinn, as you can say from the name, is Irish, and she's responsible for research and innovation, and basically there are two big dossiers, European Research Area, I will say a few words, and Innovation Union, I will not mention it further. So it's important to understand that we are divided into two departments, but we work very closely together. Why this next slide on the European Commission's view? I mean, doing policy doesn't always look very practical, especially after what I saw yesterday, for instance, with all the research on data, etc. But we have a method to our madness when you do policy, and one of the important elements is to have statements and to build on these statements and to have people who take a leadership in your working environment. So this is the case with the two commissioners. So I gave, for instance, on this slide, one of the statements of Maura Geoghegan-Quinn. So why do we, as the European Commission, care about open access? We started working on open access in 2006. And from a small team, from a small individual of one person, we became a team of two or three people. We were three, we are two now. So why do we care? It's about serving research and innovation, and it's about improving return on investment. So this is our point of view. You may not share, of course, this point of view, but this is how we value open access. So more precisely, we believe that it's an opportunity to allow the benefits of science to be exploited by all concerned researchers, industry citizens. And also what is very important is to give equal access in all EU 27 member states, in all the 27 countries that form the European Union. It's also very important to keep in mind for us is that we have to consider that not all countries are the same, north, south, east, west of Europe, and what can suit, a policy that can suit one country may not suit another country. We care also because it's about giving free access to results of publicly funded research, and also what we put very much forward, it's about open access driving down the costs for dissemination without sacrificing quality. So this is the backbone also of our policy, and this is one of our motivations. What do we want to achieve? Basically three big lines. Develop and implement open access to research results from the projects funded at our level, so FP7, and from the 1st of January 2014, its successor, Horizon 2020. That includes also funding research and some support activities that are connected to the area of open access. So continue what we've been doing as much as we can. And it's also about encouraging national policy initiatives that aim at improving access to and preservation of scientific information. And with that, we say to the member states also that they should work and be coherent all together. And that's the last point. We can help. That it's about contributing to policy coordination between the member states so that it's always good to have some leaders among in a team of 27 countries, but you have to be sure that everyone is following. So that was for this long presentation. I think most of you know that it's how open access is structured now in the seventh framework program. And all the three titles are clickable. I think they might be, they are hyperlinks if you want. So the open access pilot in FP7 that we started in 2008, it's both green and gold, but the emphasis is on self-archiving and an obligation to make best efforts to provide open access. In the case of green open access, there's an embargo, 6 to 12 months, 12 months for SSH. It covers seven areas of the total envelope. And until up to now, I saw the statistics a few days ago, it's more than 1,300 projects that are concerned by the pilot. In general, we talk about 20% of the total of FP7 budget, that is for 7 years. And we did also a survey last summer, in summer 2011, among the project coordinators concerned with the pilot. The European Research Council, it's also quite important. They are part of course, the European Commission, and they have some guidelines for open access. And in fact, they have updated during the summer their guidelines for open access. And for instance, in the case of green open access, they asked for a 6-month embargo, including also for peer review publications in the field of social sciences and the humanities. And they have also this mandate for open access to data. OpenAIR, you know it very well, and with OpenAIR Plus, which is going to link publication with the data sets, we are very happy with OpenAIR. And also OpenAIR is also our little internal success, because it's been really, financed, and well, the call has been prepared before OpenAIR Consortium won it, by the two different services of the Commission. So it shows also that we work very well together. So that's for FP7, but also I wanted to have a special slide on gold open access in FP7, because right from the beginning of FP7, the open access publishing costs are eligible. So whether you are part, a project is part of the pilot or not, in any case, if one wants to claim the costs back during the time of the grant, those costs are eligible. Of course, there's a limitation. It's the duration of the project. In that survey that we did in summer 2011, there were some interesting answers. For instance, more than half of the project coordinators didn't know this possibility. So I think we are all guilty, maybe we certainly are, for not advertising enough this. And in fact, only 8 projects out of the almost 200 answers have reported that they had used it. So it was not very good, so we should really work on that. Nevertheless, this confirms also what we all think, that an important restriction is the fact that most publishing activities occur after the project ends. But also, it was important to see that almost 70% of the respondents think that it is better to use self-archiving to satisfy the requirements of our own mandate. So it's a bit interesting, maybe because they didn't know also the possibility for gold open access. So what is new on the agenda? 3 important documents that have been adopted by the whole college, as we call it, of commissioners, so by the European Commission, on 16th of July this year. So the first, I'm going to explain in the next slide. So the first document, briefly I will mention it, it's a communication that is focusing on what we call the European Research Area. The second document is a communication talking about better access to scientific information, and the third document is a recommendation on access to and preservation of scientific information. A little parenthesis about what a communication is, what a recommendation is. You have different types of documents that can be produced by the European Commission. The first part is so-called communication, where the European Commission is just announcing what it wants to do, just its own intention. So it's quite a flexible document, and it only commits the European Commission. Then the second step is a recommendation, and you will see those three lines are also hyperlinks. A recommendation is already much more structured as a document. You have recitals, and it looks already like a real legal document, but it's only a recommendation to the member states. And then you have the next steps, the next types of document, like a directive, which has to be implemented by the government, and a rule, which is directly binding in a national legislation. So that gives you also a flavor of the difference of those three documents. I only have one slide on the first one, because I think I cannot overwhelm you with too much policy documents. I think it's maybe not what interests you most. But what you should know, might be interesting in a way, is that the European Research Area is a kind of a concept copied on the idea of the internal market, so where people and IDs, researchers, etc., circulate freely between the 27 countries, 27 member states. And when this document, the way this document is structured is around five pillars, and one of them is called, in our jargon, optimal circulation, access to and transfer of scientific knowledge. And that includes also open access. It's not only about open access, but that also includes it. It's all that I think you should know if you're interested a little bit in the policy making in the European Commission. Much more interesting is the communication towards better access to scientific information. We did not expect so many reactions from this document. We would have expected much more from the recommendations to the member states, So I'll come back to that. How is the communication structure? What is this document saying? Basically, it explains a little bit what I put in a few slides. Why does better access matter for Europe? It explains also in the text the vision of the European Commission. There is also a section on where do we stand. Again, it's a very general document, kind of a reference for us. So talking about the access to publication, access to data, preservation, and also the international context. The next section, which is also important, is when we describe the barriers to change, in particular the important issue of the transition to open access to publications. The case of data, which is complex, and I learned more than yesterday than tried to do in a few years, and the issues of long-term preservation. And last but not least, we say also a few words on the action at European level. So what has the Commission done so far, and what are the next steps? So when we describe what are the next steps, this, in summary, is what we mean. So what are we proposing for open access in Horizon 2020? In the left half of the slide, you see what is the situation now with the open access pilot in FP7. And the open access publishing costs. And on the right, how was in 2020? I put green open access and gold open access. It's a little bit artificial because, again, the pilot is not only about green open access, but also about gold. But what is our proposal for Horizon 2020? So for all the projects to be funded from the 1st of January 2014, is to move from the concept of a best effort to provide open access to an obligation to provide open access to publications. From the seven areas that were covered in the pilot, and to move to all the areas, absolutely all of Horizon 2020. Still keep peer-reviewed publications. So we're not talking about, especially in SSH, monographs, books, etc., but peer-reviewed publications. For various reasons, and also in order not to confuse anyone during our own transition from FP7 to H2020, but not only, keep the embargo, which for the moment is 6 months for in all fields except 12 months for social sciences and humanities. What we propose to add in Horizon 2020 is some sort of a pilot for open access to data. So there's no evil plan. It's a working process, so we are still preparing this our text and how this should look like. But I will come back to that. And in terms of gold open access, so keep things how they were in FP7, so whether a project was part of the pilot or not, that is to keep those costs eligible while the project runs. But of course, the money that you spend in open access publishing, you don't spend it elsewhere. And also, and this is a very serious commitment, because we could have not put it in the communication, but and try to do it the same, but we wanted to show also our good faith, is to look for a possibility to cover also later publications, that is, publications after the grant agreement has ended. But of course, not a blank check with conditions also that we are trying to define now. I have also to open a parenthesis, is so when you work in European Commission, there are people with different backgrounds and with different roles, and maybe the worst of the co-workers you could find are lawyers. I don't know if there are lawyers in this room, but when you do policy, you have some ideas and you think they are fine, but then you have a big wall of the lawyers from the European Commission saying, wait, this is not going to be possible. So we have also to discuss and try to find possibilities. So, but we are really committed to do our best. If we succeed, that will be fine. If it doesn't, then blame us, but at least we will have tried. What are the next steps? So with this communication, what we want to say is that we want to lead by example. We don't want to recommend something to the member states and do something else, which is less. So that's about leading by example. But what is also very important, and I come back to what I said before, is the fact that this is only a proposal. So all the package for Horizon 2020, including the budget, the 80 billion euros or whatever, are only a proposal from the European Commission. It's a huge package of several documents that was out in November last year. And the way things work, and I come back to one of my very first slides, is that the European Commission is not deciding everything on its own. It's only making proposals. So the normal legal procedure is that our proposal goes and is discussed by the member states, that is by the Council, and by the European Parliament. And what is very important is the fact that those two institutions can seriously amend our initial proposal. So also what I propose in a couple of slides before can end up in something very different or slightly different, because member states, because representatives of the European citizens will have made some other suggestions. In other words, this is just a normal Brussels, Washington DC business of lobbying, and this is just a democratic game, but at least you know our intentions. The timing is really now, so they are the very last discussions now in those two institutions with regard to amendments. There have been hundreds and hundreds of amendments, and open access is in a kind of a loop now also, because it looks easy when you don't know the topic, but you know perfectly it's a very complex topic. So it's the time now for the amendments and for the changes. The agenda is that all the legislative acts for Horizon 2020 have to be adopted by the end of 2013. That includes also the budget. And as I said, H2020 will start on the 1st of January 2014 with the launch of the first calls. So this is also, so this is the main part of the communication, but also what we say in the communication is that we want to continue to work with the community. We want to continue to funding infrastructures and still have projects that we can fund and work also on the coordination beyond the European Union. So that was about the communication. And last but not least, so the third of those documents is the so-called recommendation to the member states. So again, if you look at it, you will see the very rigid structure. But basically what are we doing? We recommend member states to define and to implement clear policies for the dissemination, general dissemination of, but also open access to publications, separate section for the data. In the case, those outputs results from publicly funded research. The various topics that we address in the recommendation are in particular the question of the embargo. So we cannot recommend something different from what we want to do for ourselves. The question of the copyright, addressing also the academic career system, something that we cannot really touch at our own levels. Every member state has to see how to best reward the researchers. It's about small and medium enterprises. We make some recommendations on transparency also of the process, etc. There's also a section on the preservation. Again, we always want to highlight the issue of preservation. I have also to admit that in our case, and certainly because we are not enough people, this is something that we could develop further, but we just don't have the time and the knowledge and the time to get the knowledge. It's also about making recommendations to the member states on the electronic infrastructures, about their participation in dialogues with all the stakeholders and at all the different levels, regional, national, European, worldwide, etc. Again, keep in mind, we're not talking about a couple of wealthy, well-developed member states in terms of policy and open access, but all the 27 member states. And it's about also participate in coordination at our level. For instance, one of the recommendations that we make to the member states is to give us, is to nominate a contact point for us. It's very difficult. So it's already very difficult to find us in the European Commission, in what service we are. But you can imagine also for the 27 member states, it's not easy, and it's essential also for us to know our colleagues there. So this is the beginning of the end. I just have a couple of slides, one slide of a conclusion. So what is open access to us? It's only a means to improve knowledge circulation. It is not a goal in itself, but we understand that it is essential, something that cannot be stopped. You understood, because I think I stressed this enough, is that not all member states are the same, and again, we have to be careful with what we're doing and recommending. In particular, we want really to stress at all level in European Commission when we talk outside that both green and gold open access measures should be promoted in the EU. In Horizon 2020, so in our own program, both routes, if this is accepted, of course, at the end of the democratic game, should be valid and should be complementary as approaches. And this is particularly important during the transition period of the market. And as a word of a conclusion, we believe that open access must be effective, fair, affordable, competitive, and sustainable for researchers and innovative businesses. Oops, here we are. So this is the very last slide with a few pointers. So as I said, we are quite difficult to find. We are in a team which is dealing with a work program which is called the Science in Society. where we deal with other issues such as gender, science education, research ethics and ethics in general, and I think governance, I said it already, and open access. Open air, it's always nice to, with the monographs for the different countries, etc., to get some information. We are on Twitter. I think most of you know the Twitter account of Nelly Cruz and a member of her cabinet, Carl Christian Bourg. We have also our own Twitter account, Open Access EC, that I modestly run. And the team, so it's a very small team, of composed of a French, an Austrian, and a German. So myself and my colleague Danielle, you find us in research and innovation, so working with Maura Gergen-Quinn, and Céline Ramjouet was with us, but then she moved now, working in the same department as Nelly Cruz. That's the end of this presentation, and I'm very happy to take some questions now or later.
Thank you. Has anyone, yeah, I knew there would be. Prepare yourself, Jean-Francois, this could be tough.
Hi, David Tepes from Elsevier. You've mentioned multiple stakeholders in your presentation, but there's no particular mention, and you didn't mention the word publisher in that at all. I'm just interested to see what you see as the role of publishers in this whole EC framework. And a second thing is also an additional stakeholder is the researcher, and several researchers don't seem to know how they can actually work with the EC on open access funding. So I'm interested to hear what you think about that as well.
Sure, no problem. I mean, it's only a presentation. As I said, we've been working on that since 2006. So of course, we've been working with as many stakeholders as possible, I mean, all the stakeholders basically. So in terms of publishers, yes, I mean, first I'm here today, and we know, of course, Elsevier, they came to visit us, and some, you know, all the big names. What we like to say, and as you know, not all publishers are the same. In fact, there are several trade associations, and we've been meeting all of them, and we still continue to meet all of them. This is just a presentation. In other presentation, you may find this word publisher, but of course, I'm here talking to OASPA. So I think that's quite logical. In terms of researchers, yes, it's the same. They are represented in different associations. We can meet sometimes some individual researchers that are also part of the democratic game. So yes, they're of course absolutely essential people. I mean, those are our clients, if you want. We have also projects that we fund on open access, and I'm also responsible for a couple of projects dealing directly with researchers. So it's always a different level, the trade associations and individual people. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, any others? Jean-Francois, I'll ask a question. We heard yesterday about the RCUK policy.
Yes.
And should this recommendation be adopted as is, which obviously it won't, but if it were, what would you characterize as the main differences between them, or similarities?
There are similarities. What we try to do with our recommendation is to have some kind of a general framework that can be that can encapsulate all the policies in 27 member states. Of course, the UK is very much advanced, and there's no one size fits all when it comes to policy. I may say also that, as some of you know, we've been invited to one of the talks also of the last talk, I think, of the so-called Finch group. So we repeated also at the time, and it was in May, I think. So before all of us issued our documents, what our position was. And I think there's full compatibility. Our recommendation is quite general enough. What we want to say to the member states is do something, because not everyone is advanced. Do it, be coordinated, look at the others, and we can be there, and let's try to move all together in one direction. But also, there are so many data, in the sense that, you know, how the market is going to evolve, et cetera, that we just cannot know. So that's a little bit the spirit. But I think that when it comes to the policy of the RCUK, or even to some point also with what we can find in the Finch report. Let's focus on the similarities, and I think that's the most important thing.
Thank you. Any, yes.
Salvatore Mera, CERN Scope 3. Jean-François, I will ask you a question that usually people ask me. Why is it taken so long from the first communication in 2006 to this communication, when it looked like everything was done, to this communication? You already answered it.
We are three people. And as you know, with open access, you have to open so many doors, and you have to be everywhere. It's just that it's very long. I think we've been quite quick, starting with one person in 2006, and it was a bit by chance. It was a survey on the evolution of the publishing market in Europe. And then the idea was taken by, at the time, by the head of a team. And then gradually, you know, first person started, and then we continue. But it takes time because it's a whole internal process. I may say also on the communication and recommendation, especially some people who have been following us for some time, we've been announcing those documents, I know, for a certain time. And at least I recall that we were announcing them for, we promise you, at the end of 2011. A few words. First, this era communication came in, so it was some kind of a big locomotive to which we could attach open access. We are two services, so it's also not always easy to deal. I mean, at our level, it's fine, but the higher you go, the more complex it becomes. And also, it's not a document. I mean, those two documents, our communication and our recommendation, if you want, are not adopted just and prepared by two departments, but by the whole departments of the European Commission. That means that you have also to talk and set and explain to other colleagues what you are doing, why it is good, etc. And those people can also meet external people and, you know, get their own separate influence. So it's all this policy work that takes time, but it's here.
I actually had a different impression. I was sitting there thinking, I was at the first meeting in 2007 that was held on open access and access to, I can't remember the name of what it was called then. And I don't think I could have imagined that we would be here in 2007. So,
but I know it's not a criticism, but it's just, and I don't want to say, you know, that some kind of excuses, but it's just a long process, and it's always difficult the higher you go, you know, in the system, and then people are looking what the other countries are doing and what is going outside Europe. So it's always taking the first stance, and everything is connected. So it takes a bit of time, but here we are now, but it's not over.
Any other questions?
There's a question over there.
Yes.
I'm Mark Thorley from RCUK. Obviously, working in the Commission, you hear what other countries are doing and how their policies are developing. Can you say anything on how you see national policies developing across Europe on open access from the impressions you're gathering?
Yeah, I mean, we had two studies that we did through a group of representatives of member states. And if you go on our website, you will find this survey. I think it's published in December 2011 on the situation in EU member states. It's very, and some other countries, because we have also Norway, Iceland, Montenegro, and I forget one. It goes in every direction. It's just pure, you know, I think, can I say, it's a knowledge that is not on top of my mind, but the situation is very different. What we do as policy officers is that we visit some countries or at the time of the Open Access Week, etc. So it's good for us to get also a flavor of the situation in some countries. And it's not that the more north you go, the more organized and it is. You have also lots of initiatives in southern countries and to a certain extent also eastern countries in Europe. But yes, that's what I said. We want to have a kind of a general framework that can survive for long time and be a kind of a reference, a general path, and we can fine-tune things on the side. Those are the communication and recommendation, those are kind of framework documents that they do not impede us from going more into a direction or the other one when the time comes. If I can answer your question. Not answering your question.
Okay, I have one more question here.
Yeah, thank you. Esther Horn, University of Groningen, the Netherlands. I have a very practical question. This 22nd of October, the Open Access Week starts. What will the European Commission do to sort of promote a new policy?
Very good question. What we do is just we try to be there. I mean, in my case, I will be in Sweden, I think, in Stockholm for the week. But we don't really do anything. We don't really have the, you know, again, it's three people. We cannot really do something. So, but we answer the request to be there. But we had last year Commissioner Nelly Kroes in the Netherlands. I think she did a video speech that was sent. We don't have anything like that now. We just ran out of time. What I can tell you is that our Commissioner Maura Gegenquin will be in Berlin 10 conference in person in South Africa. So it's already doesn't look like a big thing, but for us, it's also internally, it's also a little success. Because there are so many other issues in research innovation in European Commission than open access, that one of the most important work we've been doing in the last couple of years, which is invisible, is just to bring this issue on the surface of the activities, political activities in research and innovation in European Commission.
So. Okay, thank you.